Hey there, this is Eric with Tourism Marketing Mastery. And I thought, in light of recent events with coronavirus absolutely crushing our industry and things just all around not being that fun for anybody in tourism right now, I thought you could use a little bit of a pick-me-up. And so what I've decided to do is give you a recording that I recorded a little while ago, but I haven't put up. And maybe unintentionally, I've been saving it for a time like this when we could use a little bit of a pick-me-up. So the interview that you're about to listen to is with a man named Justin King. And I'll explain a little bit more of his background and his history and so on and so forth in the interview itself. What I want to give you as context is that Justin has had a profound impact on my life in more ways than he knows. He's had an impact on the way that I run my businesses. He's also impacted my personal life. I actually directly took some of the things that Justin's about to talk about in this interview, and I used those exact tools and strategies to woo my, girlfriend to start with, into who's now my wife, and I'm starting a family with. And I'm thankful to Justin for showing me an innovative way of looking at relationships and how to blow people away with relationships in regard to tourism, but then also in regard to how you can use that in your personal life. So I'm hoping that Justin's words and his message and his strategies will have an impact on you in the same way that it had an impact on me. So without further ado, let's jump into this interview. I hope you guys enjoy it. Hey, my name is Eric Hatterscheit, and I'm part of a group of independent tourism operators that you've probably never heard of. We deliver experiences that are beyond a photo shoot. When you're not, we actually have to change our guests' lives. But because we don't have unlimited budgets like the big brands, we have to think differently. We have to be clever with our marketing. We need to reach our audiences to make the impact, but we also need to be profitable right from the start. Unfortunately, traditional education is about 20 years behind, and they aren't teaching us what we need to know. So we've decided to take matters into our own hands. We're sharing marketing tactics that work today because we are experienced masters, and what we do matters. Hey there, and welcome to Tourism Marketing Mastery. I'm your host, Eric Hatterscheit, and today I've got a very special guest that I am extremely excited to interview. His name is Justin King. Hey, Justin, how you doing?
I'm well, Eric. How are you doing today?
Good. So just to fill you guys in, some of you guys might be watching this, some of you might be consuming it through audio. So if you can't see Justin, he's sitting in Fiji right now, and Justin is currently the manager of Vomo. I pronounced that right. Is that correct?
You did
Vomo,
very well.
Vomo Island Resort in Fiji. And the reason that I wanted to bring Justin in for you guys is kind of special to me. I had a conversation with Justin, oh gosh, I don't remember how many years ago that was now. Maybe
it must have been 2 or 3 years ago, I suppose.
I think, yeah, maybe 2 or 3. Maybe actually, honestly, I think, yeah, I'd say at least 3 years ago that I recall. And Justin, at the time, was actually managing a different resort out in Tasmania, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
And in that conversation, I had a moment where I learned, I'd say, more from Justin about what I call back-end marketing, so how to market a resort in terms of the guest experience and making sure that you would get that word of mouth marketing. I learned more from Justin in that short conversation than I had in years of studying marketing at university and just understanding, you know, what I should be doing in order to drive marketing beyond just kind of reaching out to individuals. So what I'd like to do is we're going to have a bit of an organic discussion. I want to give you the opportunity to listen in on this discussion and learn from who I would consider to be a master in the industry, one of the best in terms of managing luxury destinations. And Justin, maybe you can speak to this more than I can, but the destinations that you have managed in the past, do you mind actually just giving us a bit of a rundown of just a few, kind of a little bit of your history, where you've come from, done up till this point?
You're far too kind, first of all. I don't deserve nearly that much praise, but you know, I still remember that chat. I really enjoyed having it with you, so I'm glad it was something that we both hold dear to us, because I learned a lot from you as well, Eric. So I started in hotels from an early age. I suppose, like most, I bounced around for a range of properties, trying to figure out what it was and what mark I wanted to have in hospitality. Like most people, I suppose, hospitality to me was a way that I could travel the world without having to stay in one place and put together a client base or have to be rooted into one spot. And of course, it changed and evolved over my career into a real passion, not only for the working with people component, which of course is an appeal, but really the science, and I suppose, well, the soft science that is how various humans will respond to certain emotional situations that they're put in coming into a hotel. And I just got fascinated by it. I started over in started my management career after bouncing around a little bit in a property that used to be called Ian Schrager Hotels. It's the Sanderson in London. Very design-led, very much about celebrities walking through the doors, and very much about what you were drinking, what you were wearing, how much your cases were worth. And I was there for 6 years, a young 19-year-old, and really was excited by the whole idea of the design property. But then I started seeing it as somewhat two-dimensional. It was a great way to attract guests. It was a great way to build this amazing property so that you enjoyed being in it. But it was run so that really there was an element of arrogance to the hospitality experience. And it started to wear on me. And so after finishing with Ian Schrager Hotels, I tried corporate hotels. And of course, found no love in wanting to become an accountant locked in an office somewhere. Mm-hmm. So fell upon a very small property in Fiji. Now, it wasn't a luxury property. In fact, it ranged from $40 per night up to $1,200 per night. But I was there for 2 years, and we all sat together at mealtimes, and we all ate at the same table. Now, when you're paying $40, that guest looks incredibly different to someone paying $1,200 a night. And what was really interesting was that when we were nailing the experience, when everyone was really happy, everyone stopped talking about what everyone else did. It was more talking about where have you traveled before, what brings you here. And that's when you knew it was really resonating. It was almost when we dropped every sense of pretension and people actually, you could almost see their shoulders starting to drop. And it became a very different experience. And so that was really my first take at immersive hospitality and being able to stage an experience through a range of touch points that really resonated with every single guest, whether they were paying $40 or whether they were paying $1,200. And I realized that you can actually be everything to everyone if you had a little bit of science behind the experience that you were trying to create, and if indeed you were really wedded and enjoyed looking after the people to begin with. So I think serendipitously, I then went to a property that was renowned in Australia and arguably one of the most beautiful properties. It's called Sapphire Freycinet down in Tasmania. It's only got 20 suites. And it had over 100 staff members. And this to me was the place where I was going to build on that idea of immersive tourism. But this time I had the staff, the resources to back it up. And it was my first foray into true luxury. So the ultra high net worth luxury style, that true luxury style rather than the premium. And it was fascinating. Seeing where people came from and seeing how, and it was all Australian, and being able to start working them down as soon as they got there, beating the pretension out of them so that they can start to enjoy their experience as not many people would actually see them. It was a very satisfying role to have because you could actually see people relax in front of your eyes and you would actually give them memories that they would last a lifetime with. And that to me is the most noble goal of hospitality, is to be able to change their life just a little bit for the better. And like I was telling you before, Eric, when it all goes horribly wrong, you're not going to kill anyone. So that's what I enjoyed greatly. I've now come to Vomo, which is back in Fiji. I've had two young kids, and I really wanted to bring them back to Fiji so that they could learn from the Fijians what we learned 10 years ago. And we've been here 4 months. It's an established property, again, a luxury property. It's 28 villas and 4 residences. And I'm really just looking to see if I can do with an established property, what I did with a new property, and really sort of test myself out here in the middle of the South Pacific.
That's awesome, Justin. I really appreciate you going through kind of a bit of your history. And
this the bio.
Yeah. For those of you guys that are listening, I'm gonna throw in here one thing that actually really attracted me to initially researching who the manager was at the Sapphire was the fact that I did a lot of back-end research. We had a number of conversations with different people around the world, and what really stood out among all the places that we had researched as far as luxury destinations went was that the reviews that you were getting while you were the manager there were blowing the reviews from all the other establishments out of the water. And I found that fascinating because if any of you guys are not in the luxury market, to blow luxury guests out of the water is not an easy task because their expectation is already pretty high. So I was like, what is this resort doing? What are these guys doing over there where these guests are absolutely raving about the experience that they're getting at a high-end destination where that's kind of the expectation. So that's what led me to that conversation with Justin. And that's why I believe he's what I would argue one of the best in the world at what he does. So
Again, you're too kind. It was a heartening time and a really humbling time at Sapphire. So for 6 years in a row, I was there a bit over 6 years. And for 6 years in a row, we were number one on TripAdvisor, which is, of course, an important public forum to us, in Australia for luxury hotels. Never number two or number three, but we retained that number one spot. And 4 years ago in London, we received the best boutique hotel in the world. And it was an incredibly proud moment for me and the team, not just because we thought what we were doing was good and noble, but more importantly, it was putting an area that we loved on the map, and that was Tasmania. And it really meant that we could punch above our weight and showcase that destination to the world. And it was really humbling.
And I love your perspective here, Justin. I love where you're coming from with just, you know what, this is not a pretentious thing. Exactly as you said, you kind of beat that out of your guests. This is we really wanted to share an amazing both experience and destination with the world. And your authenticity in that, I think, really came through clearly. So that's pretty cool. All right, so where I'd like to go from here, Justin, is I'd like to delve a little bit deeper into a little bit of your methodology because it's something that has clearly worked out well for you. And that's shown through not only the guest experience, but also you've been recognized on an international level with your achievements. So when it comes to delivering that experience, do you mind going a little bit deeper into that initial conversation that you had with me about the concept of how you kind of elevated that experience for the guests beyond what they'd experienced at other destinations?
Yeah, sure. Well, it was multifaceted. And there was a number of really interesting ways that we looked at the service experience. One I inherited from my predecessor and my mentor in this field, Matt Casey, and that was the concept of plus one. And what he did incredibly well, and what we then took and ran with, was the concept of moments of truth. Now, the idea of journey mapping or process mapping is not new. Whether it's walking in for the first arrival or whether it is indeed just walking past a guest, as a housekeeper's walking past a guest. That is a moment of truth within a guest's experience of the property. And of course, the science is that over time, consciously or subconsciously, we will form an opinion on a service or a product based on these multiple moments of truth. And so you can actually score based on any single moment of truth. So for example, when you first walk into a hotel room, there's one of three things can happen. Right? The first thing is you walk in, everything's clean, everything is in its place, and you go somewhere in the back of your mind, yes, this is what I'm paying for. It's exactly what I expect. Well, that to us is a zero moment of truth. We would score zero against that. If you walk in and there's weird hairs on the bedspread and there's a toilet brush and weird marks in the toilet, well, that's somewhere in the back of your mind you're going to say, well, this isn't really a nice hotel, and I'm not very comfortable being here. It's not a good hotel. We would call that a minus one. moment of truth. And then, of course, if you get in and everything is immaculate, it's a little bit larger than you think. There is the minibar tailored to your needs and expectations and your tastes and dietary. There's music playing that you like. There's a handwritten note from the general manager welcoming you. Somewhere you're going to say, this is an amazing experience. And the philosophy was, the more often we can do that, the more often we can absolutely knock a moment of truth out of the ballpark, the more often we're able to put together an experience that will last a lifetime. And our mantra at Sapphire, overriding everything that we did, whether we were housekeepers, whether we were the general manager, was we are here to create lifelong memories. And to this day, if you called that property and said, hey, what's your job here? They wouldn't say, oh, I'm the telephone operator, I'm the receptionist. I'd say, I'm here to create lifelong memories. And we do that by breaking everything down into moments of truth. Now, when you have this through a well-articulated culture through the entire team, you start seeing really cool things happen. So, for example, I had a time once when, I should go back. So every single moment of truth, we train with the staff on an organic, emotional level. So we break down not a range of tasks into policies and procedures. In fact, we don't have any procedures at Sapphire. Instead, we have moments of truth. And we identified hundreds of moments of truth that happen in every single department, in every single element of every guest stay. And we broke it down as to how a guest is thinking, feeling, and needing when they undergo that particular moment of truth. A classic one is when you first arrive at a hotel, a nice hotel that is $2,000-$3,000 per night. When you start thinking of the thoughts, feelings, and needs of our guests, you start getting the usual things. Guests might be excited. They might be high level of anticipation. They're things that you expect, but when you start brainstorming these, you start getting some really interesting feelings and needs. People might have high levels of anxiety. They may not know if they're going to fit in, and so they may feel self-conscious. They may need to go to the bathroom after a two-hour trip on the road. There's some really base needs and feelings that they'll be going through. Well, as a front desk agent going through this arrival process, by knowing that, you're arming that staff member with this wealth of information about the guest and what they need out of this experience before they even see that guest. And so to be able to mitigate all of those thoughts, feelings, and needs, and then to be able to build the positives on the moment of truth was really exceptional. We also made it clear that people don't own moments of truth. A guest service manager or a general manager doesn't own this moment of truth. We all do. And that's really important. The way that it was supposed to work at Sapphire was we would see a car drive in through the gate. It would come up on our phone, and it would give me or the guest service manager just enough time to run out and greet the guest, and we would stand there like we'd look like we've been standing there forever waiting for them to come. We'd open the door, and we'd know their name through a series of moments of truth that happened before then. While the guest is trying to figure out how in heck we knew their name, we're showing them into this beautiful area, and what they liked to drink magically appeared, their bags magically disappeared, and all of a sudden they started feeling comfortable. That's how it's supposed to work. But there were times where moments of truth fell flat on their face, and what I love to see was when they were saved. There was one time in particular, I remember there was a member of our engineering team saw a car arrive at the front gate. And his job for the day was that he was pressure washing the driveway, a dirty, messy job. Mm-hmm. And he saw that there was no guest service manager or no member of the management team coming out to welcome this guest. And he recognized it as a moment of truth falling south really quickly. So he turned the pressure washer off. He kind of wiped his hands. He ran over to the guest and he goes, g'day, I'm Paul. Welcome to Sapphire. And he then actually engaged the guests through the door and in through the arrival experience. And it was to the point that when that guest left, the only member of the team that they remembered was Paul's name. That's when you know you've got it right. Mm-hmm. So when you really articulate it well through the team, cool things happen really quickly. And it also means that you can be forgiven anything. When we don't have a lot of procedures, things go wrong. And anywhere in hospitality, my argument is that unless you want to be robotic about your service delivery, things will go wrong at a great pace of knots. But when you have smashed every single moment of truth that comes before it, it's amazing what you can be forgiven for when that service failure does happen. And that's the wonderful thing that I learned at Sapphire, was that your job is not to make sure that everything goes perfectly. Your job is to make sure that everything goes so well that everything that happens thereafter is forgiven. And whatever else happens, they leave with tears streaming down their face and a memory that lasts a lifetime. And it was the greatest, most enjoyable part of working at Zappa.
Well, I don't know about you guys listening, but for me, the first time I heard that concept of plus ones and how it was implemented, that was a game changer for not only our business, because we looked at how do we implement that at our own in our own business, both at the resort and then also in other businesses that I've run since then. So in consulting and in media and the tour business and like just other things I've been involved with, implementing that concept has been such a powerful concept for us. And it's the reason that I think it's super relevant, is because it really plays into this whole concept of what I would deem as back-end marketing. So making sure that you're delivering an experience that is something that changes lives. And if you do that, then as Justin's saying, you know what, that's such a powerful emotional experience for that guest that it would be probably an oddity for them not to tell other people about it. Which really sure. plays into that back-end word-of-mouth marketing. So in my opinion, that is a form of marketing for sure. I think a lot of people see marketing as just this front-end thing. And I don't think, you can have the best marketing in the world, but if they're not getting an experience on the back end that they're willing to talk about, then it's really, it's missing the point of what I consider to be good marketing. Good marketing should be something where you're proud to bring somebody into your establishment because you know you have a world-class experience for them. So,
And it's hard to get advocacy. I mean, in a practical setting, particularly when you're dealing with high net worth individuals, it is hard to get someone to actively advocate.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot base yourself on the fact that 80% of your guests judges you at a 4 or 5 star. You've got to go beyond that 5 star. And a real litmus test for me was going to those social channels. And, we were used to getting 5 star. But when you read through the TripAdvisor comments, they have to gush. They have to flow with emotion. And you could almost get a sense when you were off the boil, not because you stopped getting 5 star, but because you stopped seeing the emotion coming through. Mm. So I'm a huge believer that whatever you're doing, whether it be a hotel or any service as a service provider, you have to have an emotive element, and you cannot get advocacy without it.
Which I think is that's an awesome point for anyone listening is using that as your litmus test, not just the 5 star. I think a lot of people, yeah, that's what they look at and that's what they stop at, but it's really, cause you know, when someone's looking to book your resort, I think, I forget exactly what the stat is, so don't quote me on this, but I believe it's something like, actually Justin might know, but 90%+ of people that book a destination have actually gone through and read a number of the reviews before they book there. I know I do. Absolutely. For sure. And that makes sense.
And that's got a direct impact on how much direct business you get. Because at the end of the day, the commission that you pay a travel agent or a wholesaler is really the cost it is to you to be able to convince someone to stay at your hotel. And that's because you've not done it through your social channels, mm-hmm, or you've not done it through your public forums enough. The proof of the pudding is not evident enough. And that's why I was really concerned about that emotional tie, because people pick up on that at a base level and go, I want to feel like that. Not I want to swim in that pool, but I want to feel like that. And so that was a really important element. Now, it's a hard thing to do. How do you put emotion into your experience? And the way that we did it was by having a number of filters through the property. And we've done the same here at VOMO. But what is it that we do better than everyone else? What's the DNA of our experience that we provide? Now, for Sapphire, that was luxury, authenticity, and surprise. And here it is intimate, experiential luxury. And every single decision I made as a general manager, but every decision that food and beverage staff attendant made had to be put through those filters. And if you do that consistently enough, you see that DNA coming out strongly, and that comes with and that attaches the emotion to the experience as well.
And that's an awesome add-on to that is adding the filter in there, because that's something that I don't know if I know that you had discussed it in our initial conversation, but for some reason I'd forgotten about it, and then I had to rediscover it. I had to figure out, like, oh, these moments of truth, the plus ones, they work really well, but it works a lot better when you're doing it through that filter, because that is, in essence, and from a marketing perspective, from a marketer's perspective, that plays into your brand communication. How do you want to be communicated across the world? So, yeah, that's extremely important, adding those filters in there. I want
to
ask
you... It has to have all three of those filters. Otherwise, you're not being true to yourself. And you can see some fantastic examples of plus ones that, you know, have been almost there, but because they've missed one of those filters, it hasn't quite been spot on.
If I might put you on the spot a little bit here, but do you have an example of that you can think of?
Yeah, I do actually. That's maybe going back to my Sapphire days. So we had those filters again were surprise, authenticity, and luxury, and there was an element of science as to what they were. And so there was a guest, and he was a Southeast Asian guest. I think he was from Singapore, and he had mentioned over dinner to one of the wait staff that he had never been fishing before. Now, what our normal response would be was, here's a fishing rod, we'll give you some bait, we'll show you a couple of spots, off you go fishing. But it got to the food and beverage attendant knew that one of the apprentices in the kitchen was an avid fisherman. And she'd never fished in the area. So she went out to Corey and said, hey, listen, where are some spots where you might recommend to go fishing? Her plus one was, I'm going to show him, I'm going to tell him a bit of my knowledge about the property and I'll tell him where to go fishing. Corey then went up to him and said, you know what, I'm getting off in an hour, happy to take the guy fishing myself. You know, what a cool experience. Yeah. In his own time, he was going to be and show authenticity to say, this is my bit of Tasmania and I'd love to show you and teach you how to fish. So we were really proud of that stage. Then he went and jumped in his 1975 Nissan Bluebird and took him to his favorite fishing spot. He'd forgotten the luxury element of that. Now, if he got one of the hotel chauffeur cars and took him there, that would have been the best plus one ever. But he'd let himself down because he jumped in his probably chain smoking in his car and there was rubbish all through there. And that's where it was let down. So while it would have been perfect at another property where luxury wasn't an element, it was a big element of ours. So we had to sort of retrain a little bit there. But I thought the thought behind it, and it actually drives... I mean, we work in an industry where there is a lot of jobs that are seen as menial and repetitive. I've done housekeeping before. I don't know if you have, Eric.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've cleaned my fair share of toilets.
It's a repetitive job, and it's a tough job.
Yeah.
You walk into a room, and you can imagine how some of the viewers may have left hotel rooms in the past. You know, it is not a nice sight to be confronted with. Mm. Your job is to clean that in 23 minutes or less, and then you go and do that 20 times more afterwards. It's tough. But if you go in and go, right, what do I know about this guest? What can I find out about this guest without being intrusive that can really make their stay more enjoyable? And the best plus ones came from the housekeeping team consistently over my 6.5 years at Sapphire.
Hmm.
The housekeepers, because they were the ones that was actually making their day better. It meant that the 21 rooms that they had to clean, they could actually do so with a lot more vigor because everything was a bit different. So for this room, they're going to put extra towels because the guests used every single towel. For this room, they took out the apple juice and put in extra orange juice because they drank all of the orange juice. And for the other room, they saw a book face down. And so they just took a beautiful sapphire bookmark and quietly, without telling anyone, just put it back in the book because they're the little things the guest may not even realize, but it will make their stay better, make their stay more enjoyable. And again, at that subconscious level, will make it more, make it a better experience. But more to the point, it drove our team to want to do better every single day because it was a competition with yourself rather than just a menial task.
I think it's an awesome concept because it gives the team just a lot more purpose in their work, which in my own study of management, having purpose in your work, and I think most of us know this inherently, but having purpose in your work is something that will drive you far beyond just the menial labor turning into a paycheck. So
Well, you know, and we are so bad at it in hotels. We're good at attaching purpose. Your purpose is to make beds and clean this room before 2 o'clock. Well, that's nothing that anyone will resonate with. And you will find, and a great way to test a hotel and how good they are at extending this culture, is say good day or say hi to one of your housekeepers as they're walking past the suites and see how engaged they are. Overwhelmingly, the answer is they are not engaged and they will give you a grunt if you're lucky. Geez, I reckon I'd grunt a lot as well if I had no emotional purpose with the work task. But if you find a way of attaching this some purpose that's relevant to that individual, that it appeals to their sense of hospitality or their sense of competition or their sense of being able to make someone feel comfortable, well, then you've got a really cool purpose attached to their role.
That's really cool. What I'd like to explore a little bit further here, Justin, is you mentioned a lot of benefits, obviously to the guests with the experience, but you've also mentioned benefits from an economic standpoint too, to this whole process in terms of saying, hey, you know what? I mean, we got these amazing reviews, which meant that that the travel agents, they don't have to work as hard because you're doing a better job. You're doing a better job on your end with showcasing that experience to the guests. I'm just wondering if there's any other benefits to this whole concept of applying plus ones in the guest experience that you saw beyond what we've talked about already.
Yeah, well, certainly we're in an isolated area, middle of Tasmania. It's a tough gig for a 22-year-old single person to come and work in that environment. And so really it was a means to an end for loyalty and helping with turnover, which is a huge cost, particularly to an isolated luxury property. You have, you know, properties in Australia that 6 months is, you almost get a gold watch for. And so we saw a great benefit there. And we saw a great benefit as well to improving the offering that we already had. So I am the least creative person in the world, and I really struggle to come up with new ideas and new ways to drive my business forward and to add a different dimension of experience. And it meant that I had 105 engaged people who would come up with the ideas for me and be able to have ownership over that. It also meant that we were really agile as a business because we were able to turn on a dime. If we had a good idea, we could go, you know, with 105 people thinking in a very similar way, we could start going in a very different direction very quickly. And that's important at luxury because you need to be able to change and evolve your product, especially when you're trying to attach, maintain and enhance a huge repeat following. You have to have something different for that 9th, 10th, 11th time guest. Otherwise, it gets old no matter how good you are. And so we were able to evolve really quickly from it as well. And that was probably the biggest tangible element. From a marketing point of view, yeah, the difference that we saw in direct visitation, in direct channels, was fantastic. And of course, our marketing team had a lot to do with that. But I maintain that on your second, third, or fourth stay, when you have given someone an incredibly emotional, memorable visit, they don't need to go back through the travel agent. Doesn't matter how attached they are to the agent that they are. They want to book with Justin or Russell or Ross rather than the agent. And that to me was hugely powerful.
That's massive. That's quite a few benefits. I haven't added them all up. We'll probably do that post podcast and be like, hey, these are all the benefits of implementing, but there's a lot there. That makes it absolutely worthwhile.
That same mentor, Matt, he had a phrase, and I love it. And I don't believe it's his, but I've heard it from him, is that culture eats strategy for breakfast. And that's a really cool phrase that's often stuck with me. You cannot think in a 3 to 5 year horizon unless you've got a lot of goodwill and a lot of clear direction within your team. And that's really what I'm trying to do here at VOMO now that I'm in a completely different culture, in a completely different stage in the property life cycle, and being able to see if I can replicate it to nearly the levels that we did at Sapphire.
Interesting. Going back to, I think, it sounds to me like you've had a few mentors along the way that have taught you a couple of things and you've had your own experiences. What is one thing that you wish you had known earlier in your career that you think has really helped you out?
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if it's experience or age, Eric, but you know, I would have loved to have dropped any form of pretension a lot earlier in my career. We've all met the snooty waiter, or we've all met the hotel manager who likes to look down their nose at you. And I think, I'd hate to think I was ever a snooty waiter, but I think to some level, hospitality, particularly the future of hospitality outside of, say, a large corporate hotel. So I'm talking experiential resorts, isolated resorts, certainly, and everything luxury, cannot have any breath of pretension to it. And I wish I knew that a lot earlier in my career.
Interesting. I guess I'm going to explore that a little bit further, which is you've been in the industry a number of years. It sounds to me like it's basically been your life's work has been in hospitality and, for a lot of it, destination tourism. Would you say that you've seen any changes at all over the years that you've been in the industry?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a lot of changes, and I think it's changing faster now than it's ever changed before. Technology is playing its part, but also I think the overriding need for luxury guests to now positively enhance a destination overrides just about all of our thinking. And so this is the concept that when I travel to Fiji or Tasmania and I spend a lot of money, I want to know that I'm enhancing that destination, either culturally, or I want to know that I am not in any way detracting from it. I think everyone's become so sensitive to our forefathers' work in the 80s and 90s being so horribly destructive to very sensitive environments and cultures that they've become very sensitive to that. And that's changing really quickly right now. I'm now in a very environmentally sensitive area. And our plastic usage, any form of carbon footprint is incredibly sensitive to our guests. And I've only felt that in the last 5 years at the luxury level.
That's really fascinating. So what specific adaptations or changes have you been making in order to foster the guests' own need for realizing that they're there to enhance the destination as opposed to take away from it?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think there's a number of ways that we do that. For Vomo, for example, in my first 4 months when I got here, we're still using plastic water bottles. And that was almost the last generation of thinking that a plastic water bottle builds trust, right? I know the source of this Fiji water, and I know that I can trust it, therefore I'm going to relax a little bit more. That's how we used to think in the late 90s. You need to have trust in the property that you're staying in. And you still need trust. You just need to prove it to your guests or earn it with your guests in different ways. But we've just commissioned a bottling plant. Now that will be, and by the end of the year, will be completely single plastic free. Now that's the modern way that we build trust. We need to know, as guests, we need to know that the place that we are staying is doing everything on our behalf to make sure that this pristine environment stays pristine for as long as it can. And it's interesting to me, not that it's a fad or anything like that, it's really a continuation of that. We need trust in the property that we're staying in. It's always been the case. It's just how we earn trust is changing over the years. So it's been interesting watching that. And that's been the biggest driving force coming out. Our reliance on diesel generation, for example, is still an issue. So we're exploring solar options now. And it's become particularly important to a guest that I'm not creating any diesel fumes as a result of me being. And they're predominantly what we're seeing in the industry right now.
That's awesome. And that plays into a larger conversation. I don't want to go too deep into it, but I've been fortunate enough to talk with a number of destination owners in remote locations. And what I've seen as an emerging trend as well is the fact that I don't know if the newer generation is the proper term, but the managers that are replacing the old managers are much more seeing themselves as stewards of their location. Sure. And of the environment than the previous generation. So it's interesting to hear kind of your perspective on that.
Yeah, I think again it's an old adage, and it's always been an adage that the GM is the custodian of the property. But now the GM is the custodian of the guests and the wider destination as well. And it's not an emerging trend, to be honest. Vomo's probably 5 years late, but once we get that base correct, once we start being able to get those credentials reset, we can start doing some really cool things in that space.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm interested to see what you guys come up with here in the next few years.
No pressure.
Yeah. We're going to come back. We're going to do a, hey, 5 years down the road, what did you guys actually accomplish? You know what I'm also kind of interested with here, Justin, is you have quite a bit of experience in the luxury market, in the industry. I know that you've done a lot of things right. Would you be willing to share with us something that you feel that you didn't do right or you learned from? I think maybe if I'm going to put this into a question, let's say, what would you say has been kind of your biggest failure in your career, and what have you learned from it?
Gee, how long's this podcast? Yeah, look, I mean,
I'm just going to take a walk. You can just go on. Yeah.
And this is perhaps why I chose hospitality and not medicine, although I'm clearly not smart enough. But, you know, it's a trial and error based industry, and I love that. And sometimes we do make some pretty big mistakes. But I think it's been in the world of marketing, to be honest with you, Eric. I think, and we shared this a little bit earlier. But I think I've been very good at throwing mud against a wall to see what sticks. And just watching so much of it not stick is frustrating, hugely frustrating. And not having the sophistication to be able to really understand how to target what is very small groups of people, especially in the ultra high net worth industry. I know how to retain them, and I know how to make them become advocates, but I don't know how to target them effectively. And I've done some horrible things over the years as to how we sort of mess that up, whether it be walking away from wholesalers too early and feeling a hole or a gap emerge, or whether it's keeping wholesalers too long, getting your market mix wrong, and diluting your overall rate. There's been some errors that have cost us money. But as long as it doesn't, to my mind, everything that we try and fail at, it cannot affect the guest experience. That's what's paramount. So most of my failures have certainly cost money, but they haven't broken the guest experience. And I'd be very defensive of any of that touching the guest experience, because that's what you can't recover from. So I'm happy to say, well, I can't think of anything huge within the realms of massive failures. We've been lucky enough to protect that guest experience the whole time.
Okay.
That doesn't really answer your question, though.
Well, it's no, that does, I think, because there was a specific just point in marketing there, and just saying, hey, you know what, we're just throwing, like you said, mud at the wall, trying a lot of things, still trying to figure that out. But also, I think what I got out of it was you're learning things here and there from it, but the big thing that you really are delivering, or what you learned, is that can't affect the guest experience. So.
And I think there is a big question there for the entire industry. I think, and I'm speaking hotels now, but, you know, there is a lack of sophistication. There's a range of academic research into experiential luxury. Absolutely. But is that relevant enough for individual small properties? And that's a real big question in my mind.
And that's something that we're exploring here at Tourism Marketing Mastery is, you know what, I think the academics are doing a great job of accumulating data, but that's not always exactly what you need
not when you're sitting in the middle of the South Pacific with only 28 villas. It really is, you know, at times the need to be able to grab relevant information quickly, and in the lack of that, that's when all your big mistakes happen. Now, again, those mistakes aren't going to break your business, but they're not going to drive it forward. You have to keep driving a small property forward at all times.
Completely agree. Always keeping, looking at how do we improve what we're doing? How do we improve where we're at, both in experience and then also just in execution on our operations, on operations, marketing, finance, whatever that might be. You know, what I would be interested to know, Justin, is, You've seen some successes in your career for sure. You're definitely a guy that's self-driven, from what I've gleaned. But I think what some of the people that are listening to this might be interested in is, you know, you, like you said, you've had some success, but you've had success, more success than a lot of other managers out there. Why do you think that you have succeeded in areas where I know that others have failed? I know that there's a number of, and I don't know if failed is the right term, but just why do you think that you've kind of managed to achieve some of the accolades that you have, whereas a lot of others haven't? And I know that there's a lot of managers out there, and they probably aren't listening to this, because if they were, that's a different mindset. But a lot of managers out there that I think do a really poor job of running their destinations or their property. So my question to you is, yeah, why do you think that you have succeeded where others have not?
Well, it's not something I've thought about much, but it's a good question. You might have answered part of it there yourself, Eric, by always being interested and curious and by wanting to improve yourself as you go. But to me, it's the ability to change the way you think about a certain issue. And again, you might call it a paradigm shift, and your ability to be able to reinvent yourself all the time. I'm a completely different person than I was 19 years ago, and I'm very thankful for that. And I suppose never forgetting that at the end of the day, we are servants. We are people that genuinely love to give an experience that makes people feel good. And I think there is a lot of hoteliers who forget that on a daily basis, particularly senior hoteliers, that without guests, without having a genuine interest in guests, and I'm talking about getting to know them, I'm talking about trying to figure out what makes them tick, you are never going to be able to make decisions based on their best interests. And if you do not make decisions based on their best interests, you will lose advocacy, you will lose goodwill, you'll lose repeat guests, and you'll have to start relying on dropping prices and using wholesale markets. To me, it's a very clear chain, but that chain starts and ends at you being able to keep your humility and to be able to be willing to change to shift your paradigms and to be able to learn every single day. And I keep getting down to pretension, but you know, we just still see so much of it in the world of hospitality. It's breaking it down. And I think that's where now certainly I'm motivated. Certainly I'm someone who I suppose is ambitious, but I've never sought to get success faster than I should. And if I do, I'm very comfortable outside of my depths, and or admitting to myself that I'm outside of my depth. I need to change quickly here in order to succeed. And so I think just having an open mindset and being able to learn every single day.
From that perspective, I'd be curious to know, and I'm sure some of the listeners would as well, what are some of the best resources that have helped you along the way? Like where have you gone to find some of these resources or to absorb some of this information to better where you're at?
Yeah, sure. Well, look, I think they're hard to find. To be honest. And I think, getting to know general managers in your own market or senior managers in your own market is one way that we naturally do it. I don't think it's a good way. What we're hearing is we end up being an echo chamber. And particularly in small markets like Tasmania and Fiji, you have a lot of echo chambers. Mm. And you have to be really careful of that. And so you need to look a little bit more broadly. But when you look more broadly, most of the resources out there relate to properties very different to myself. And so there's not been easy access to resources. It's been quite hard to find ways to learn. And so you find that the best source of information, your best resource, becomes your guests. Mm-hmm. And you have to listen to them really, really carefully. At Sapphire, we used to, on a fairly regular basis, conduct incredibly immersive questionnaires with guests. And on a very regular basis, I'm talking every single day, we would ask them for guest feedback. Now, we all look at guest feedback as hoteliers, but I guarantee you 95% of hoteliers look at what score they're getting and then move on. They don't look at the interesting information that actually lies beneath. And the cool thing about luxury, when you have that level of advocacy with the guests that you want, and even if you don't, people really want to help you. They really want to make the place that they've just stayed in better.
Yeah.
And That's been the best resource for me to be able to keep current, because these are incredibly well-traveled people, but to be also able to keep the business moving forward.
That's awesome. That's a very interesting spin on it. Is just go to the end user.
But I mean, it's in the lack of, you know, and usually it wouldn't be the one method I'd recommend, but there's nothing else really out there. Short of academia, there are some great social networks of hoteliers, but they're often got a level of pretension attached to it that you can't spot fact from fiction. So I find the best way is just to go straight. And I suppose it is so easy to become defensive, particularly in a small property. Where you put your entire heart and soul in this place. I live on property. I'm here 24 hours a day. Everything I do is about this property. Same in Tasmania and Sapphire. And so when you've got a guest saying, you know what, I've got a way to make this better for you, there is a huge natural urge for you to get very defensive about that. And even if I, these days, if I do get a bad TripAdvisor comment or anything like that, my first response is to be defensive. And you have to get above that, because, I don't think I'd ever have all the answers. And there has been times where I listen to a guest and discard what they tell me, but very rarely. Usually there's a bit of gold in there.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think even with the negative responses, because I've done this with some of our other clients where they say, well, how do you get rid of the negative responses, or how do you even address them? And I say, sure. You know, look for the elements of truth in there. Look for where there's, even if there's a tiny scrap of truth in that, how can you improve? So when it comes to those responses.
There's still an argument that exists, and I can't believe it exists and how much it permeates the industry, but guests complain because they want something for free. I don't think I've ever met anyone who just wants something for free. Mm. I hear about them. I'm sure they exist in the world, but I might have met one or two of them. You know, nobody comes to you with a complaint. In fact, why would you make a complaint? It's a horribly confrontational stance to take unless you genuinely believe there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And then it's just trying to understand where they're coming from and why they're bringing this to your attention. And it's always well-meaning. And it's not because they think they're better hoteliers than you. It's because they genuinely care.
I believe that to be true, especially on the higher end of the market. There are times, I'm going to say, on the lower end of the market. And this is, I think most of the people listening probably are not in this boat, but we were in the very beginning in the low end of the market. We competed on price. And if that's the case, I remember we did specifically have one guest one time. They came and they stayed for a week. And they came and they asked for a refund because it rained that week. And they're like, well, can we get a full refund because of the rain? And we're like, sorry, that's something that's out of our control. But I think that's something that you tend to get on the lower end. And I think for anybody listening to this, that's not the market that you want to be in. If you're in the lower end of the market, you need to be doing everything in your power to move up to the next level and the next level, because being in the higher end of the market, you have just a lot more opportunity, a lot more resources. And in all honesty, in my experience, and I think Justin probably can echo this, is you tend to have guests that do have your best interests in mind, and want to help you become a better resort, better place, and are not looking at just, hey, where can I get the freebies? So. Yeah, valid.
And to be honest, to take your example and apply it to a luxury point of view, it's a classic example of how hoteliers, and of course, in the cost sensitive market, very different. But to take that example, if someone wanted a refund because of the rain, we've had that example before. Mm-hmm. And what I took out of that was that we did not anticipate and engage the guests well enough during the rain for us. For them to take their mind off it. And so it's amazing when it rains here in Fiji, we are so active and engaged. That's where I really worry, because people are naturally in worse moods. You don't come to Fiji for rain. Mm. But of course, we kind of like the lush tropical background. So yeah. Clearly there has to be rain. But it's how we engage and how we anticipate that. So anticipating the needs before it gets there means that you don't then get that feedback. And so that's where I love luxury over the say that the areas that really heavily compete on price, is that you have the ability to make everyone's day enjoyable. It doesn't matter what the weather is. It doesn't matter. You know, to be honest, it doesn't even matter if the food falls flat. As long as you can anticipate it well enough, you need to be able to be on your game at all times, and it's pretty cool.
Actually, that's a learning moment for me, because it's a better perspective to have to say, hey, you know what, where are you falling short if they come to you with that comment?
People will naturally be down when it rains, mm-hmm. and it's how are you mitigating that? And so perhaps, and respectfully, I tend to suggest that it was because whatever had been done during that rain was not enough to dissuade and mm-hmm. get them out of that mindset. Some people take a lot more dissuading than others.
Yeah, and I don't doubt it, because that was back when we first took over the resort, and sure. And you're right, we didn't at that point we didn't have the resources that we have now in terms of providing alternative experiences for them because it's raining. Whereas sure. now we do. So that is a valid point. Yeah, absolutely. Huh, okay. Well, you've given me something to think about just on a deeper level there. Which, you know what, actually, on that note, I think often in any industry, not just tourism, but in any industry, there are myths or misconceptions out there that the majority of the industry follows, but they're not necessarily correct. But it's just, people are doing it just because everyone else is doing it, or because it's the way that it made the most sense a period of time ago, but it doesn't make sense now. So I'm just wondering from your perspective, Justin, if you see that at all in the industry, if you see there being a common myth in this profession that people believe and they're following that that you have an alternative perspective on.
Well, to pick up on the last answer I gave, I'm big now into, you know, what is now a widely held tenet of psychology, and that's presumed positivity. So the myth is that assholes exist, and I challenge that myth. I really don't believe they do. And if someone, it was a movie, and I can't even remember the movie, but it was a real paradigm shift for me, someone said that people are rude generally because they're expressing an emotion, and that emotion is generally fear. Mm-hmm. They're afraid that they're not going to get what they want, or they're not going to get recognized, or they'll look like they are too poor to be where they are. But there's always a base emotion driving that behavior. And I like to adopt the presumed positivity. I don't believe assholes do exist. I think you just haven't succeeded to get on their level. Mm. If someone is becoming a particular thing, and I think the hospitality industry is poorer for it, because we all believe, and I'm trying to change my mind, I'm trying to change my stance, but you know, it is so widely held that, you know, you can't look after everyone. You can't make everyone happy. Mm. And I really, really think that is just a cop-out way of saying that, 80% is good enough for us.
That's interesting, because that goes into a much deeper topic, and I don't know that we have time for it. Who knows?
Oh, sorry, we delved into psychology. This well, is marketing. Sorry.
Because, you know, having a marketing background, I think the reason that I'm in marketing is because I'm fascinated by psychology. I'm fascinated by human interaction. And a big part of why I'm doing what I do with Tourism Marketing Mastery is because I believe the same as you. I don't believe that there are assholes out there. I think that we haven't hit their level of understanding, or understanding where they're coming from or what their needs are. And I think that can be changed. But I do think it requires a lot of work. I think that there's a lot sure. that needs to go into training your staff, and understanding, like, now your staff are not just staff. They're not just somebody that's going to serve a meal or be polite. Now they're somebody that needs to understand a much deeper level of human psychology and how to interact with that individual. So I think that's something that's a topic that's worth exploring further, but I don't know that we have time to go through all of it in this interview.
Scratching the surface of that yeah. one.
I think maybe with kind of your path as well over the years, you know, you've said one of the best resources to go to is the guests themselves. Along your path, who would you say are, beyond the guests, actually it could include guests, but who would you say are let's say three people that have been the most influential in terms of kind of where your life has gone or that had the biggest impact on you?
You know, I'm going to put, one's a bit different. it must have been 14 or 15 years ago when I was a young duty manager at Ian Schrager Hotels. And this was the really pretentious, celebrity-led, really great experience, really exciting place to work. And I was learning how to be a manager. I just graduated with my hotel management degree, so I was ready to be general manager, right? And I remember I had a team briefing, and her name was Catherine. I can't even think of her last name. This was 14, 15 years ago. And I had said something. And rather than her doing something straight away as a result of what I said, she just looked at me and she said, "Oh, Justin, when are you going to remove that stick from up your ass?" And I thought, I don't know, it just was really stuck with me. And that's been a really influential turning point in my career, and saying that, you know, let's just drop all the crap that can often come with creating an experience. So that might be my wild card. My predecessor at Sapphire and then my eventual boss, Matt Casey, really was fantastic at being able to encourage me to be able to have the paradigm shifts, to fail, to be able to sort of dust myself off. And in the space of guest experience, he's been second to none in my book in terms of both the scientific application, but also in being able to get a cultural and a well-articulated culture through an entire team. And what that enabled me to do was to be able to pick that up, to be able to really run with it and be able to take it more to the guest perspective, and to be able to get it to permeate through the guest experience, moments of truth and everything like that. And probably thirdly would be the owner of Sapphire, and that would be Greg Farrell. You know, an incredibly decent man in terms of his principles, his moral compass, and the way that he made decisions. And he influenced myself a lot, saying that you can be very successful. And in fact, of all the times that I was at Sapphire and here at Vomo, certainly at Sapphire, of the 20 richest people in the world, we met the majority of them. We met 12 of them. So we've met quite literally the richest people in the world. And they are all incredibly principled people who have a very grounded sense of right and wrong. And that was a real learning for me, that I think you can be, you can have a very misguided set of ethics and be wealthy, but you can't be really wealthy, really seriously wealthy, and have a misguided set of ethics. And I learned a lot from my time in that space. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
No, I think it does. And it also provides interesting perspective. I think that often... I think film does that. I think film does that to a lot of us, where we have this perspective that to have a lot of money, sometimes you have to be an asshole or you have to take advantage of people. And that has never been my experience. My experience, the wealthiest people I've met, they become wealthy because they are intent on providing as much value to the world as they can. And so
indeed,
they get
and
that.
What a cool, and now I don't have billions of dollars and I don't think I ever will, but what a cool philosophy to take on board, whether I did have billions or not.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's why I think they've been so influential to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. That's, you know, it's a cool perspective to see kind of what's shaped your life and yeah, you ending up where you're at now. This is a marketing podcast, I'm going to ask you a question. I know that you're not necessarily the marketer on your team, but I think that what you have done is you've done a phenomenal job of marketing your resorts on a world level with what you do, which is letting the destination experience speak for itself. And I think that's the most powerful form of marketing there is out there. So what I will ask you, and hopefully you can answer this to the ability or from the perspective that you have, but what would you say has been the most effective piece of marketing that you've ever either done or remember seeing done?
Yeah, sure. Well, there's a couple of things, and they've got a common thread that I can think of right now. The one that we're doing right now is being really effective out in the marketplace, and that's called Stay It Forward. And so Stay It Forward is encouraging guests and a call to action to guests to book their next stay. But in doing so, a percentage of that will go towards our charity of choice, which is Cure Kids Fiji, which is an amazing charity. And it's all about identifying previously undiagnosed previously undiagnosed conditions in kids on the outlying islands. And what that has done is we're not giving any discount. In fact, we're giving a percentage that is about the same as what discount we would do to any dynamic pricing or tactical offer. But it is really resonating with our guests heavily, not because it's going to the guests. It's actually going to a third party. So it speaks to that really wanting to help the destination that they will be returning back. So that's a really lovely one. In a similar vein, and again showing the you know, the humility of a lot of people in the luxury space, or also the, I suppose, the propensity to be generous, is when a guest left Sapphire, and it was a guest that we thought fit neatly into that bread and butter segment that we're really trying to look to get more advocates mm-hmm. for. So, you know, it might be an ultra high net worth area of Sydney or Melbourne, then we would send them a little card. It would just be a card saying, we know that you loved the Absolutely Gorge Pinot Noir while you were with us. Please let us know the name of a guest that you would like us to give a bottle of Absolutely Gorge Pinot Noir so you can share it with them. So there was no call to action from them. There was nothing saying we want you to return back to Sapphire. There's nothing saying we want you to add to our database. But of course, they did have to give us that email address, and we would then be introduced to a friend of theirs. Now, we did then send out this bottle of wine in a beautiful sapphire box. It would make them curious, and then they'd come and book with us. No doubt that guest would then, you know, the friend of the guest would call and say, what's this sapphire all about? And then it would actually be a call to action for the guest to then advocate to us. And that was really, really successful as well, I thought.
That's a phenomenal marketing concept, which we actually do teach. We teach in our course how, like, what that process looks like that you've played on, but that's a unique way of doing it that I haven't seen done before. So I really like that. My one question is, there's a couple of ways of doing that. The guest that you asked, hey, who's a friend that we could send this bottle of wine to, did they receive anything, or was it was just, you know, the feeling of being able to pass that on to a friend?
They didn't. It was just the feeling of being able to pass it on.
That's phenomenal.
That was debated hotly within the corporate team back in Sapphire, and we decided that it should be completely selfless.
And
it worked well.
And there's a whole, I wish I could get into it. There's a really fascinating story behind why that actually works better in a lot of cases than sure. actually rewarding them. But we're not going to get into that just yet. So, Justin, I've been monopolizing a ton of your time. I have a couple more short questions for you here, which is just a little bit more about, you know, if someone's wanting to follow in your footsteps in terms of just understanding how to be world class as a resort manager and execute themselves in a way that really makes a difference in the environments that they go into, what would you recommend being kind of the first step that they take to be on that path?
I think like anything that you love, you need to be able to understand it as much as you can. So never stop learning, and never allow yourself to stop learning. So I think it's very easy to end up in a position that you feel comfortable with, or a position that you feel like, yes, I've made it. And, you know, I remember when I was 19 years old or 20 years old, I said, I want to be a GM by 30. Pretty short-sighted, because 30 is not that old. And so when you do get there, all of a sudden you have no idea what to do with it. So for me, it's set yourself goals that are based on personal achievement rather than outward achievement. And you know what? It's never going to be the industry for you if you don't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And so those two things, and you know, I have left properties before because I've woken up and not enjoyed it, and that's really important. I think thank goodness I did that, not just for the property, but for myself as well, because otherwise, you see that the term hospitality burnout exists. You see it, and it's something that you know, it's a tough industry. You are being asked a lot of every day. It can be monotonous. It can be difficult to master, but it can also be that you get set in your ways quickly, and you can become quite begrudged with the world. So don't ever let that happen to yourself, I suppose.
And I'm going to bring something back that you mentioned earlier, which is your ability to be open to new perspectives and change. And I think for a lot of people, especially the older you get, and not that I'm necessarily old, but I think even the older I get, the more set you kind of become with, oh, okay, this is the way things work for me, or this is the pattern I'm in. I'm curious whether you actually have a process for yourself in being open to that change, because I think that's hard for a lot of people, including myself, is saying, okay, I'm going to be open to a completely new concept and try something new that I haven't before. Do you have a philosophy or a thought process that you've used to make that change possible for yourself?
It's a really good question, because to be honest, it's not something that comes easy to me. And so to me, it is just structured discipline of almost forcing myself to get out of my comfort zone, because I am someone who retreats into my comfort zone really quickly. It's almost difficult to believe given my chosen profession, but I'm an introvert at heart. I like to be able to retreat into myself when needed. And you almost need to push yourself to change. And the way I do is just sort of diarize that once a week to be able to sort of give myself the impetus to go, all right, well, we probably should start thinking in a different way. The other thing is that I've got a great network. My wife is exceptional at being able to challenge my position. Geez, is she ever. we just come at a problem. We come at a problem really differently. And so being able to talk it through with people, but particularly in my case, my wife, has been really beneficial to me. And she challenges me every day to change and to change her mindset. And that's been really, really good for me, because I think I would struggle to do it all by myself. So I would need support. But yeah, my philosophy is just make sure that you just keep changing. And if it doesn't come easy to you, then just find a way that make or gives you the ability to do so.
All right. I think that's a valuable nugget for myself and for the listeners as well. It's just, yeah, exactly the way you summarized it. I don't need to repeat that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's much more science involved to it, but yeah. To me, it's something that I struggle with the most. And I've found myself at times in my career where I just haven't been able to motivate myself to be able to, you know, or more commonly, I think, is to get caught up with the day-to-day. That's a really easy thing. You can, particularly in hospitality or any other fast-moving, fast-paced business, you spend so much time firefighting that you don't rise above all of that and actually be able to plan in a longer-term horizon.
On that note, I know I've got a ton of follow-up questions. Hopefully this is the last one. But on that note, you've managed to pull yourself out of positions where you're firefighting on a consistent basis. And I know that there's always going to be issues. I mean, you can't be in any industry and not have things come up, especially if you're running team. All right. Unfortunately, I got to insert myself here. The recording cut off, not sure exactly why, but it just cut off for some unknown reason. And I did manage to replay it again, but there's a couple of minutes of this interview that weren't picked up by the mic, unfortunately. So I'm going to try and recap to the best of my ability what Justin said in response to my question. So finishing off my question, I was just asking him, hey, you know, you've managed to pull yourself out of a position where you were just fighting fires in the company, fighting fires, you know, dealing with all the issues and challenges that come with being a manager. What would you say to someone if they were in a position where it just felt like they were just dealing with the daily operations and they wanted to focus more on strategy? What's the easiest way to pull yourself out of that position? And his response was interesting. He said, well, you need to have autonomy for yourself and you need to have autonomy in your team, which means the ability to make decisions for yourself and execute on those decisions. And he said a really interesting study that was done was showing that the manager was actually not the highest stress person in the team. It was usually a supervisor that was the highest stress position because they were in a position where they were a little bit stuck. They didn't have the same amount of autonomy that a manager often has. And whatever decisions kind of came down the pipeline, they had to execute on, and they weren't able to be as flexible with them. Now, what was interesting in this process is I don't want to leave it there because
Justin's perspective on this was, yes, it's important to have autonomy for yourself and it's important to have autonomy for your team, but you cannot do that. You can't just give away the ability to make whatever decisions you want unless there's already a level of trust, a deep level of trust on the team, and there's a culture there that supports that trust. So what he said was that he's been in positions in the past where has not had autonomy, and in those positions he's had to quit because he's not able to actually execute on the decisions that he thought were the best decisions at the time. And so he could not continue working in those environments. He had to quit in those environments. So he went to go work with the owners, the boards of destination resorts that gave him the autonomy to do what he needed to do. However, he still had to earn that trust first by showcasing his capabilities and his background. Now, when it came to his teams, he said he's made the mistake in the past of just giving a team autonomy because, you know, as a good manager, you want to say, oh, I'm going to come in and I want to empower my team to make decisions. But you can't do that necessarily right off the bat, because sometimes you do that and there's no culture, there's no trust, and there's no real framework or direction for where those decisions are going. And so it all can kind of run amok because no one's on the same page. So what he's learned is that, yes, you want to give your team autonomy. That's important. You can't sit there and micromanage them. However, what you need to do first is you need to build a culture that allows them to make decisions that are in alignment with where the whole business is going. And as part of that, if you don't have a culture where every team member can come to you and have a deep level conversation and be comfortable actually not only sharing their ideas, but more importantly, sharing the ideas that will challenge you and say, hey, that's not the best way. I don't think of doing things. I think we need to do things this way. If you don't have that level of trust on your team, then your team's not ready for autonomy yet. But that's your fault. That's not theirs. It's up to you to actually provide the culture, provide the trust, provide the environment that leads to autonomy. And one thing that Justin said is that when that autonomy is there, that puts you in a position where now you can actually sit back and relax a bit more because a lot more things are being taken care of because the team members have the freedom to make the decisions that need to be made without coming to you all the time and you're fighting less fires. From that response, I had a question which was asking Justin just, you know, kind of with through all his learnings, if there's any resources that he would recommend in terms of books, and also just kind of what he's focusing on studying right now. And he launched into a response which said that his main focus right now is studying neuroscience and relationship. And then that's kind of where the interview picks up again. So I'll let you guys take it from here.
About what their upbringing might have been, what their needs and wants are, that's of real interest to me right now. I think neuroscience is doing a huge amount of fantastic work in the service space now, being able to attribute it to relationships. And that's of particular interest to me.
Interesting. Okay. Awesome, Justin. Well, I thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure.
I've learned a ton. I'm sure there's a lot more I know there's a lot more that I'd love to pick your brain on. I'm just with you.
No, that's it. You've tapped me out now. Yeah. Nothing more.
Yeah. We've definitely, we've gone over the time that we discussed for this interview, but I really appreciate you putting extra time into it. I don't know if you're a guy that people follow or not, or if you have any online presence, but let's ask that question first. Are you okay if some of the listeners come and follow you somewhere online and check out what you're doing?
Yeah, look, I think I'm a horribly backward person in my socials, but hit me up on LinkedIn, and okay. I'd love to hear from like-minded professionals or people who think that they particularly might disagree with anything that I've said today, because I love having those discussions, and I feel that what I've talked about today, there will be things and ways in my thinking that will completely change in the next 10 years. And so I'm looking for people who might want to challenge some of those and start that process for me. And LinkedIn's a good channel for me to be able to do that on. And certainly reach out through you, Eric. I'm very happy to give out any of my email details because I'm really keen, as I sit here in the middle of the South Pacific, to understand or to remind myself that I'm in the middle of nowhere. So any feedback would be fantastic.
Okay, awesome. What we'll do is we'll make sure we attach links to Justin's LinkedIn, as well as if you're open to giving out your email, we can put that there
yeah,
too.
Sure.
Just so that if you want to get in touch with them, that you've got an opportunity there you have that availability to you. So availability to you, I don't think that makes sense grammatically. That you have that available to you. yeah, we'll make sure that you've got the resources there. Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Justin. Really appreciate you taking your time today to sit down and kind of discuss your experiences with us. That's phenomenal. It's an amazing resource for anybody that's listening to this that's in the hospitality market. It's something that that I think that you can take just a ton of gold out of that interview. So,
wow, that's very kind of you, Eric. But I must say the pleasure's been mine. So thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, we're going to wrap up here, guys. And if you've got any other questions, then you can always go and leave a review on this interview. Just let us know whether it was valuable to you, whether it wasn't, and you can leave a rating as well. Just, hey, is this something that you're getting value out of? It helps us for future interviews and future podcast episodes, and just understanding what kind of content it is that you're getting the most out of, because that's what we want to deliver here. All right. That being said, we're going to wrap this up, and we'll see you guys next time on the next episode of Tourism Marketing Mastery.